Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Going to be a perfect weekend for you to get out and about in your lawn, your landscape bed, and get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center. We'll check that complete forecast coming up in just a few minutes. Good news is we're not in Texas. It is just a tragic story down there. Do keep in mind that if you have the opportunity to donate either some time or some money, please do. But make sure you do it cautiously. There are going to be a lot of scam artists out and about. The American Red Cross is a great place to donate your time and your money pretty safely. Morning, Tony.
Good morning, and I couldn't agree anymore.
Well, thank you.
Well put, Ernie.
Yeah, well, you know, it's one of those things where you see the storm coming, and we're very fortunate here in the Ohio River Valley that a lot of these storms, even during the winter, have a tendency to roll around past us. And when you see something like that happen on a coastal area, and you just think, oh, those poor people. So I can imagine there'll be some recovery efforts and relief efforts that'll be organized soon, and we'll all pitch in.
You know, what makes this particular hurricane even more interesting is the fact that they're always comparing various models with one another. And the European model says it might hang out there a little bit and spin around and go back out into the Gulf and reestablish itself.
Yep.
And
then come back in a little farther up the coast.
That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. So unpredictable.
Right.
You know, the last time, I'm trying to remember, it was 2008. Was it Hurricane Ike? That had hit Texas and kind of made its way up through the Ohio Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that specifically for this reason. We were up in Atlantic City at the Arete Show. And when we flew back into Cincinnati, you saw these blue tarps on people's roofs.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa. Yeah. But I had heard it was, you know, pretty gusty, a lot of wind in that particular storm.
I remember it, and so does my wife, Lisa, because that was the day that she had to take her road test for her motorcycle license, and they made them take the test in that storm.
Really?
Yeah. And she passed. There were a couple of girls that didn't, but yeah, she got her driver's or her motorcycle rider's license that day, and it was pretty awful.
Interesting.
But now, you know, pretty safe.
But what do you think, is there any potential that this can make its way up our way with a lot of rain?
According to the forecast that I just saw, that we could see some of this, remnants of this in the form of some showers late Monday, early Tuesday, but then it will clear right back out.
Well, the weather's been nice here lately.
Oh, my gosh. Sure. Hey, I did want to tell you, I had three people contact me over the weekend that heard you say I was headed to Hopkinsville. For the eclipse. One of them was my son, Travis.
Well, people just don't know what you're doing, you know? Nor do I. So if I don't know what you're doing, I want to make it up. How's that?
That's okay. Travis's message was funny. He goes, please tell me you're not going down there. He goes, you're already hard of hearing. Now you're going to be blind because I know you're going to got to follow directions.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm not going. Where did you hear that? He goes, Tony said it on In and Around the House that you were headed down to Hopkinsville.
That's great. Yeah. You know what? I forgot that. I forgot about that. Last Saturday, I had told Bob, I said, yeah, I already went down there and, you know, he's setting up. And I kept telling Bob you were acting a little squirrely. You know, you were afraid, you know, you're a little apprehensive. You didn't know what this really truly meant.
Yeah.
You were spooked and you wanted to see the eclipse nonetheless, but it was almost like the time when you went to Scotland.
Yeah. And you shipped my motorcycle over.
My dad almost believed that one. I had mentioned I rode your sickle out to DHL. They crated it up and sent it over to Scotland. Mm-hmm. My dad said, did you really do that? You didn't do that. So, you know, a little fun. A little fun. That's all it was.
Hey, I noticed on our Facebook page you posted a couple of things we're going to talk about later in the show, the plant of the week.
Ornamental grasses.
And so, we also have our friend Margie coming in.
That we do from Bushelman Supply. We're going to talk probably a little bit about some fall things, you know, some hardscaping, some fall items that, I mean, with the weather, the way that it's been.
Fire pits.
Yeah. And also, I know that Bushelman Supply, they'll be running that their annual September sale for garage doors.
Mm-hmm.
Keep that in mind as well.
Yeah, it's going to be a great show. We got a lot to talk about, a lot of ground to cover, and we have a lot of questions, too, that over the last week or so, the cooler weather, some of the temperatures not being August-like, and then we had the rainfall the other day. So we're going to see about how that affects it.
I don't think the summer has really been all that bad.
No, no. Didn't feel much like summer at times, but...
Well, it's for the most part, you know, my take on it, it's been rather nice. We've had some timely rainfalls. Maybe some people had more rain than others, and just the opposite. You know, some people didn't get as much rain as they would have liked to. But it was pretty sporadic, but I think for the most part, the timing was there. I know when I can look out and see, you know, we sit there on 3L, and we have between the parking lot and 3L itself, we have like an island that has grass. It's not burn up.
No.
So
no.
If that's green, I know we've had enough rain because I don't water it.
And I noticed that, you know, with the cooler weather, I was a little surprised you didn't break out the long sleeve shirt and the short, which is pretty much your uniform in the fall and the, well, when morning, the cooler
yeah,
temperature.
Late fall, yeah. That's, to me, that's perfect. As long as I'm not cold up top around my chest, I'm all in.
You're a happy camper.
I'm a happy, happy camper. But, you know, everything that we're going to talk about this morning and today's show, you know, really has a lot to do with the way the weather's been treating us in such a good way.
Okay.
You know, that has a lot to do with sowing grass seed. I wouldn't even be opposed if somebody wanted to kick off their Fertiloom three-step lawn program a little early, too. You know, I think we can certainly do it. You know, I always preach that and talk about that and kicking off the Fertiloom three-step program around Labor Day weekend because... That you're just going to get to see your lawn green up like nobody's business, and it's going to look great. But, boy, a lot on our plate. And like you said, we're going to talk about the ornamental grasses, which I think, you know, I don't know if they've fallen out of favor or not, but we'll talk about that sometime this morning.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment, but when we come back,
we're going to talk about the lawn. And if you need to sow grass seed, there's some things you're going to need to know.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Gorgeous, gorgeous weather for the weekend. If you have some time planned for your lawn, we're going to help you get ready for some things you want to make sure that you get done before Labor Day weekend, because this sort of sets us up a little early, is what Tony was saying. But today, look for high temperature right around 78, maybe 80, clear, crystal clear blue skies for today and tomorrow, a little warmer tomorrow. But then a remnants of the hurricane, is it Harry? Harvey?
Harvey. You're close. It starts with an H.
Yeah. Could show up here Monday and then early Tuesday, according to the forecast, just changed a little bit. And then we'll see some of that clearing back out again for another beautiful midweek low humidity.
Great. It's great. You know, now that's kind of interesting because just a moment ago you let me interject and talk about Harvey. Because we were talking about those models, the European model kind of predicted it would go back out into the Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying it's coming up?
Some of the rain is coming up.
Okay.
So it's going to disperse.
Right. Hopefully, if you sow grass seed, it's not one of those gully gushers that washes everything away It's all for none. But, you know, I want to put a lot of emphasis right now. You know, and I know we've had some timely rains, and I know that for the most part, people's lawns are green, especially those people who typically do not water throughout the summer months, and you know what I'm talking about. You look outside, and it's green. But, you know, with the temperatures the way they have been, and we're nearing the end of August, you know, turning the corner, going into September, this is the ideal time to set up the lawn, take care of some of those repairs, and sow grass seed.
Right.
I am telling you that, and I want you to, you know, just, if you're going to do it, get the project moving. Map it out.
Sure.
Don't wait, and don't call in and say, hey, can I do this in the middle of October? That's why this is so important.
Now, let me ask you, is it a little too early to be concerned about some of the weeds that go to seed in the fall? I mean, a lot of the things that we'll ask about in the spring, you will say,
well,
on occasions that, oh, that went to seed. In the fall, you should have treated for that.
That's a good point there, but you also have to take into consideration what type of condition is your lawn in.
Right.
So for the most part, to give you a perfect example, you know, you're talking about some of those winter, you know, annual weeds that germinate late in the season.
Okay.
Those people who have nice lawns and put down maybe a second type of pre-emergent application late in the summer, going into the fall, early fall months, you'll be protected from that.
Okay.
For example, I put down another round of Dimension in my lawn. Although I used Prodiamine earlier in the season, you know, Prodiamine gives you the most effectiveness early in the season, and that is in the Fertilume program for the three-step lawn program that we talk a lot about. That's the first step with a little bit of fertilization, but it's most effective early in the season, and it keeps gradually waning off as we progress through the end of the summer months, depending upon how much rain we get, how often you water. So therefore, that barrier starts to break down, and then some of those weed seeds are what gets in on us late in the season. So if your lawn's looking nice, I preach this all the time, you know, late in the summer, put down Dimension on your lawn. That's going to give you another 4 months. That's going to take you through the fall season. It's going to keep those winter annual weeds from germinating either in your landscape bed or in your lawn. So that's a good question there. That's how that all comes into play, is what your lawn looks like right now. And Ernie, if it doesn't look good, then we need to drop back and punt, and we need to take care of some things.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Cliff on the line from Lawrenceburg, and I hope I'm saying this right. You have Xena plants?
Yeah, zinnias.
Okay.
Yeah. Zinnias, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and we planted them 3 years in a row now, and they always look great. But this year, I have about, I would say 50% of them have these brownish black spots all over the leaves, and it's just, it's killing the plant.
It's interesting. Go ahead. I'm listening.
Yeah, so we don't know. I mean, we'll have one, you know, we got a group of them around the light post, and, you know, about half of those, there'll be a perfect one right here, and the one right next to it's all just turning brown and gray and dying because of the spots.
Yeah, you know, I know that some plants, and I'm not going to say this with the zinnias, for example, when you plant the same plant in the same spot every year, sometimes you're more likely to set yourself up with some disease issues. And for example, especially with petunias, you know, you can end up getting a Phytophthora in the petunias, and it wipes them out. It becomes soil-borne. And then all of a sudden, you know, you can't plant petunias anymore. You need to plant something else. If I'm not mistaken, and this is something you're going to have to do, and hopefully you can follow up with this, if you can take a sample of your zinnias into the extension office over there in Indiana.
Right.
I know they would be more than happy to take a look at it and analyze it for you. You might be kind of battling some sort of a blight. You know, it's, I've heard of this before, but I've never seen it on zinnias, but I've heard people talk about it before. So
it's like the same thing, like tomatoes get that blight.
Exactly. And you'll see those brown, like dark lesions on the leaves as you're explaining.
Yep.
And now here's something else that's going to come into play, because, I would have to even do some, you know, research myself, but first and foremost, see if you can take it to your extension office and if they can identify it and label it as such. And hopefully it isn't. Maybe it's just kind of weather-related, environmental, to where it's, you know, it had something to do with some of the high humidities or humidity and temperatures that we've had with some rains, overhead irrigation sometimes.
Right.
But what's really important, at the end of the season or any time now, what drops or looks bad, get it out of there and discard it. Throw it away. So you're going to be practicing good cultural, like gardening approaches, and keeping things clean and sanitized to a degree.
So the ones that are dead, the ones that are that look like that, I should go ahead and just get rid of that plant and just get it out of there.
Absolutely.
Okay. So thin them out.
Mm-hmm.
Let the good ones be there. Pull the bad ones,
right.
And then take.
Right.
I'll just cut one of the ones off and just take it down to my extension office. I know it's right by the police station in Aurora.
Yeah, and you know, and please follow up with this, because this is very interesting. It's not, you know, I don't think it's common with zinnias, but I've heard of this before. So
they're so easy usually to take care of. You just go out there and pull the dead ones off, put some water on them, and they're usually good, and they just look beautiful when they're all the colors of them.
Absolutely. And, you know, also having really good air circulation around your plants like that really comes into play. The way you water, you know, your watering habits, you know, refrain from overhead watering, especially at night. So those are things that you can do to help keep that at bay and keep it in check.
Okay, well, I've been overhead watering, and it's usually in the evening.
Yeah, that's not the best thing to do. You know, it's try to water underneath the foliage and keep the water off of the foliage, especially when you go through the overnight hours. It's still rather warm. You still have those, you know, the humidity comes into play. And therefore, you don't have much wind in the evening, nor do you have sunlight to dry that water off of the foliage. So the water lays on the foliage, and it just sets the stage for diseases.
Okay. Well, there's probably a big part of my problem.
Yeah. So there's some of those things that you can do to kind of curb that and keep it in check. But see, let's, okay. You know, follow up with this, you know, when you find out what the report reveals.
Right.
And the only other thing that I do not know is once you get it, is it always there? And is it recommended that you plant something else? I would have to do a little research.
Okay. All right. Well, I love you guys' show. I've been listening to you for years, and you get lots of great tips. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks,
all right.
Cliff.
Have a great day.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment when we come back.
We're going to still stay in the lawn, and I'm going to take you through like several steps on what you need to do when you're working on your lawn and you need to sow grass seed.
Well, it sounds like cardio exercise to me. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, doing the happy dance this weekend. Beautiful weather outside and a great opportunity for you to get out. That was a great conversation there with Cliff from Lawrenceburg about those plants.
Zinnias are a big favorite. Yes. Amongst people. They just love those blooms, and they're great for cut flowers to bring in and put on a table.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But sometimes that happens, you know, and I like the fact that, you know, he kind of, you know, he owned up to like, yeah, I do water at night, overhead irrigation. You know, sometimes that gets you into a little bit of trouble. Sure. Not always, but it certainly can. And hopefully it's nothing serious, you know, just some sort of a leaf spot of some sort or something minor that can be corrected, and there's no problems with him planting zinnias there next year, which I don't think that there will be, but I'm not quite sure how some of those behave. But certainly getting that stuff up,
right,
you know, at the end of the season and making sure that it does not lie around, because those diseases will harbor themselves.
The fungus.
Almost like tomato plants, you know. And then the next season when you get those hard rains, Ernie, you know, the rains, they'll pelt the ground. Mm-hmm. They get that spore that laid there over the winter months up and moving.
Right.
It gets back onto the plant again. Something else, too, which I don't always think of all of these things, but I failed to mention, you could also take more of a proactive approach. And before things like that set in or occur, is to spray some of your plants, you know, with a fungicide. You know, when you do that before it occurs, you're a lot more effective in keeping it at bay and you know, it not showing its ugly face. Things like copper fungicide, mancozeb, things like that work really, really well. So, or chlorothalonil, that's another one. So just make sure you get good air movement, watch how you water, and, you know, if you want to take it another step further, is to use a fungicide. So that was, you don't hear that too often, but, you know, I also want to tell people that I see this all the time. They'll come in with those kind of situations, and when you have that and your plants are riddled with a blight or a type of a leaf spot of some sort or whatever it may be, and someone tries to sell you a fungicide, don't bite on that.
Right.
Because that fungicide is not going to make that plant look better. It's already there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you got to spray those fungicides prior to everything starting to kick off and occur. So that was a really good question. I like those kind of questions. But we were talking about sowing grass seed, and there are several steps we're going to cover here in the next few segments. One is site preparation. You know, that's really, really important. Secondly, it's going to be select a good tall fescue. Third, I can't say this enough, how important that a seed starter fertilizer is and what it can do for you to be successful. Also, when to apply that seed starter fertilizer. Okay, that's very interesting as well. than actually sowing the seed and applying the straw. But most importantly, you know, we need to prepare the site. You know, if you need to bring in some topsoil, do so. But I'm going to caution you, bring in a good topsoil.
Mm-hmm.
Don't buy that 99-cent stuff that you see. And
maybe topsoil, may not be topsoil.
Oh, it's muck, and you're going to see some weeds that you typically don't see around here. And it's happened to me, and it happened to me a long, long time ago as a youngster.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, I had to kill everything that I started out to do, and had to come back and do it a second time and do it the right way.
Right.
I'm trying to keep you from having to do that. So you need to prepare the site. You know, you need to bring in some topsoil, then bring in a good quality topsoil. Wherever you purchase that topsoil from, convey to them what your intentions are. Say, hey, I'm sowing grass seed. I don't want a lot of crap in this.
Right.
Because you're going to get it if you don't, you know, make that, you know, known up front. You got to get a good topsoil. You know, and secondly, if you have some weeds in your lawn right now, and based upon, you know, the weather that we've been getting, it's been so pleasant, so favorable to go after weeds, because the ideal temperatures to spray and get rid of things in the lawn is in that 60 degree to 85 degree range. Anything above 85, go do something else and put all your tools and supplies away.
Yeah.
Okay. I couldn't say it any better. Also, for those that have crabgrass, there's a lot of it out there. I've been seeing it. We can go after it. You cannot sow grass seed if you still have crabgrass present, so we need to kill it. You know, you can use Fertilume's Weed Out with Crabgrass Control. You can certainly use that. Anything that has Phenoxaprop in it will be adequate enough to get rid of the crabgrass. If the spot is huge and it's not, you know, where you have some turf in it and you need to approach it from a selective standpoint, then either use Kills All or use Roundup. Now, when we're using these herbicides, what I want to really put some emphasis on is read the label. What's important here is this, and this is why timing is everything. When you use a product like Weed Free Zone or use a product like Weed Out with Crabgrass Control, there is a waiting period before you can sow grass seed. And typically it's around 14 days. Read the label.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could kill it, rake it out, and you still have the product that's still there that's going to keep the grass seed at bay. It's going to prohibit it from developing. So you need to follow those instructions to the T. That's why they're on the label.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you use a non-selective herbicide, meaning that it doesn't care what it gets on, it's either going to kill it or it's going to injure it, that's Roundup or that's Kills All. The beauty of that particular approach is this, is that once everything browns off and dies out, you can immediately turn around and sow grass seed. But prior to sowing the grass seed, if you take that approach, you need to rake out all that dead stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't, you're not going to be successful. You need to get good soil to seed contact. So if you're allowing and leaving all that stuff that you just killed in the lawn to reside there and hang out, when you sow grass seed, it's not making contact with the soil.
Sure.
It's on top of what you just killed.
Right.
So that's important.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you rake everything up and discard it, and then we're going to move on from there.
749-D105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, talking about your lawn right now. We have some more advice coming your way, but we do need to pause for a moment. When we come back,
we're going to continue the course of the steps and processes that you need to take to be successful with sowing grass seed.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and we're going to put you in the driver's seat when it comes to taking care of your lawn. And we've been covering a little bit of ground about how to be prepared for spreading some seed or planting some seed and getting ready for next year. Tony's got some more great advice.
Yeah, there's a couple of steps you need to take when you're sowing grass seed or trying to get the lawn back to where you need it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who have a nice, healthy lawn and a happy lawn, kudos to you. You know, you got a lot more time to do other things.
That's right.
So once you get that lawn nice and thick and healthy, It's going to take care of most of those weed issues for you. Mm-hmm. I can guarantee you that. So it's going to be a lot less effort on your part. But right now, you know, we're at the ideal time of the year to start planning to get that grass seed down and take care of some of those other issues that might be plaguing you in the lawn. And we just talked about soil and site preparation. We just discussed a little bit about, you know, getting rid of some weeds in the lawn if that's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to turn our attention and focus on, well, what type of seed do you plant? And that's a tall fescue.
Does it have anything to do with what kind of grass is already there? Do you have to find something that's compatible?
You want to do your best, and it's not always easy to identify and say, hey, that's Falcon 4. Hey, that's this, or hey, that's that,
mm-hmm.
Or that's Fine Lawn. You know, you just can tell some tall fescues, you know, are in there. You can tell if it's a bluegrass for the most part. You can tell if it's Kentucky 31. But try and, you know, get it as close to what you have as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, most of us have tall fescues. Now, you know, when we select a tall fescue, you know, we talk a lot about here on In and Around the House, Fine Lawn, And this is funny, too. Just someone came into the store the other day and said, hey, I have some Fine Lawn 5GL. She goes, I might be dating myself. And I said, well, you certainly are. Because it's been around a long, 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 long time.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, as a matter of fact, who had it, your dad or your grandpa? Well, she kind of chuckled. And she said, yeah, my dad had it. She goes, mm-hmm. Is it still good? I said, well, I would doubt it,
right.
You know, but because since 5GL, Fine Lawn 5GL, which a lot of us are very, very familiar with, we've gone from 5GL to Fine Lawn Elite, which has just recently changed over to Fine Lawn H2O. And you're going to find this particular tall fescue only at your local garden centers and nurseries. It's a great one. I've been using it myself for years when I need to sow seed, and I've done so with great, great success. So definitely look for that at your local garden centers and nurseries. Or you can also look for, you know, a blend if you choose to do so. There are some people that like to blend various varieties of tall fescues with one another, and certainly there is not anything wrong with that. I know that Bob over at Bard's, he's got his own blend, and he also throws in along with that blend a little perennial rye. And, you know, I think he's got a little bit more than what I typically use. But, hey, you know, you can get from here to Florida via train, plane, automobile, boat, if you want, actually. So there's a number of different ways. And it's not always the right way.
Mm-hmm.
But,
mm-hmm.
You know, as long as you're taking this approach, you're going to be successful. There's no doubt about it. But I like to use a little bit of rye, especially if I'm on a hillside.
Mm-hmm.
Because rye is one of the first turf-type seed that will germinate. So you were calling for a little rain in the forecast, and that's where this kind of comes into play. If you're on a hillside, and until the tall fescues, you know, germinate and take, you know, get set up and start taking root, guarantee you that that perennial rye is already up and holding things in place for you. So that's a huge, huge benefit. So don't be afraid to use rye. Rye is a really, it's a nice looking turf. So we need to select the seed. Secondly, when we select seed, the big question is, well, hey, how much?
That's a very big question.
Tell me, Ernie, if you need some grass seed, how would you do it? Factor it up for me. Come on, Ernie. Just, oh, that looks good. That'd be enough.
I guess you measure and say, well, you know, my yard is 75 by 125. How much do I need?
Well, here's a good
place. That's where I go to the old boy and go, it's about this big right here.
Yeah. That's the customer I like that comes in the store and says, well, you know, from this counter, and then they'll take their foot and lift it up and say, so like over there where that tree is. Okay, I got that. I just figured it out.
In the calculator.
Yeah. That put it all into perspective for me. I love it. But just a good rule of thumb, this is a good place to start.
Yeah.
You got to look at it, you know, in such a way, how much per 1,000 square feet, and then break it down. So you need to measure the area. You know, you need to take the width, you know, by the length, measure the area, and get the square footage. And this is how I'm going to put it for you. When you're sowing seed, you're going to use 6 to 10 pounds of grass seed per 1,000 square feet if it's totally bare.
I knew there was going to be math involved.
You want me to say that one more time for
yes.
you? Okay. 6 to 10 pounds of grass seed per 1,000 square feet if it's totally bare. That's a good starting point. Some seeds, it might vary a little more or a little less, but that's where I would start.
Okay.
Now, if you're overseeding, now that's a situation where you have more turf than weeds and you got rid of the weeds. Now we're really typically what we call overseeding for the most part. You're going to use half of that rate. So you're going to look at it like this, 3 to 5 pounds per 1,000 square feet if you're overseeding. That's 3 to 5 pounds if you're overseeding.
Okay.
So start there. That will give you a good rough idea, you know, if, you know, where to start. Now, if you don't have enough, it's not a big deal. You can go right back to the garden center or nursery and pick up more seed. Now, what else is important is know what you're buying when it comes to seed. Read the label. We all have to put that label with, along with the seed. It's data on that seed. It's germination ratio. Okay.
All right.
You know, what's actually in that seed. And that all comes into play. And you can buy some junk seed. So buy a good grass seed. That's so, so, so important. Now, before we apply the grass seed, this is really, really going to make things take off for you and help you be really successful. And that's using a starter fertilizer. I can't say that enough. A starter fertilizer contains less nitrogen, which is our first number when we talk about the analysis of what's in that bag. We need more phosphorus. Phosphorus is extremely important for newly sown lawn seed to get developed and off to a good start.
Okay.
Once you do that, you're going to see things really take off and you're going to be really successful with this. That's so, so important. Fertiloom makes a great seed starter fertilizer. It's a 9-7-14 analysis. And the beauty of this is you can buy it in a 5,000 square foot bag, a 2,500 square foot bag, or if you're just doing some small areas, as small as a 4 pound bag. Mm-hmm. So you got a lot of variation there.
Do you, are you saying to mix that with the seed and distribute it? Or do you think you put the fertilizer down first and then the seed?
Bingo. You put the fertilizer down first mm-hmm. before the seed. For this reason only. You don't have to,
mm-hmm.
but I like to do it that way for this reason. Once you sow the grass seed, and then you're going to come back and put fertilizer down, and if it's a large area, well, guess what you're more than likely going to have to do? Walk on that area that you just put down grass seed.
Okay, all right.
So a guy like you, coming in at 325, coming off the scale, tipping in, you're going to put some big, heavy boot prints out there. You're going to displace all that seed and kick it around.
You're going to have ruts.
Yeah, you're going to have ruts. So it's for that reason, that's why I like to put down the fertilizer first and then the grass seed on top.
Mm-hmm.
Scratch it in lightly, you know, and you don't want to bury it deep with soil. It needs to be about an eighth of an inch in.
Is that where the fertilizer in too then? Right?
A little bit it mm-hmm. does, yes, absolutely. Now, you can also use the fertilizer if you're going to take the sod approach.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
You just think
but you got to really have that soil worked up to where you get good soil to seed contact or mm-hmm. good sod to soil contact when you roll out the sod.
Yeah.
And I used some sod last year from Turpin Farms. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. Fresh as fresh can be. It's mm-hmm. like just picked mm-hmm. because they only cut it that day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We're still going to hang out in the lawn?
We are, because after you do all of that, only a couple more things are necessary to do. Voila, and you're done.
We'll share that with you when we come back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have mentioned for the last couple of weeks that we're approaching the ideal time to sow grass seed and get your lawn ready for next year. And Tony has a few more things you might want to make certain you have prepared yourself to do.
So we've followed these couple of steps already. Mm-hmm. You know, we've done the site preparation. We've gotten rid of any unwanted weeds, things that we don't want in the lawn. And we've picked out our seed. We've sown our seed. And we've also applied the starter fertilizer, the one from Fertiloom. And it's a great one, too, by the way. So you can only pick that up at your local garden centers and nurseries. So last but not least, it's straw. And this really, really is important. don't put it down too heavy. A lot of people do that. And what ends up happening, let's just say you're calling for that rain from Hurricane Harvey, something mm-hmm. like that, coming up through the Ohio Valley.
Right.
And you have a lot of straw on top of everything you just have sown. Well, that's going to keep the ground damp and wet for a period of time.
Yeah.
And what else it does, that's going to prevent like oxygen or air getting to the soil surface.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to prevent sunlight from penetrating that heavy layered straw to get to the soil surface. And things just don't pan out all that well.
No. Uh-uh.
So when you apply straw, apply it at about a 40 to 50% coverage ratio. And what I want you to be able to do after you do this is to look down and be able to see soil through that straw layer. Therefore, that's definitely, it's not going to prohibit light to get, you know, through to it. You know, mm-hmm. we need that sunshine. We need it to warm up during the day. It's also not going to prohibit or keep air from getting to it. Oxygen, we need that.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things come into play along with moisture. And you're going to water it every day, like a shower, a light shower. You know, and don't, if you have an irrigation system, don't tell me you're going to leave it run for about an hour. That's too much.
Right.
You know, all we want is some good coverage to get that top layer, that soil, just keeping it moist, keeping everybody happy until we get germination. Once we get germination, then we'll approach it differently. You don't have to water every day. And we'll take it from there. Do not mow until that grass is up high enough without you tearing it up and pulling it out with the mower blade. And try your best not to really rake that straw out. And that's another reason why we don't want to put too much on it. And if you have a mower that has a bagger, that's going to help.
Mm-hmm.
Because you start raking and you start trying to get that straw out, you know, the grass is still tender. It's not that well rooted in. It's getting rooted in. You don't want to peel it out.
You got to pull it out if you try to rake it hard.
If you rake it hard, you're going to pull out some turf. So just keep that in mind. And then from that point forth, you know, you have all of September, majority part of October,
mm-hmm.
to mow your grass a couple of times, to harden it off, and sets it up to go into the winter months. And it's going to be healthy. Now, and in addition to that, if there are some areas that aren't quite so where you want them to be, then you can come back and winter seed in February
okay.
over top of what you've done.
Mm-hmm.
At that point in time, you don't need to really do all that much because Mother Nature's going to help you when you get the freezing and thawing cycles with that topsoil, the top layer, it honeycombs open. And when you sow that seed, it pulls it in and protects it. And you should have a nice, for the most part, established lawn coming into the following season where you can work it and get it stronger and beef it up.
Nice.
And there you go. If you take those steps, you'll be very successful.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Several ways to stay connected with us. You can jump onto our Facebook page, post questions and pictures, and we'll all get back with you on those things. And then also you can email us, in and around the house at B105.com. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back...
All right, if you have a nice lawn, we're going to focus our attention on, hey, it's that time to start thinking about your fall fertilizer applications, the three-step program from Fertiloom,
mm-hmm.
and we'll talk about that when we come back.
We'll be right back. Welcome back, In It Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. It is going to be a great weekend to get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center and get ready for fall.
I said it. And you know what? Next weekend, too. Labor Day weekend, holiday.
Yeah.
Man, that is when I like to kick off the Fertiloom Fall 3-Step Program.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always around Labor Day weekend when I put down that first fall application. And you can do it any time throughout the month of September. You know, it's your choice. But I think you kind of... You cut yourself a little short there. You don't get that opportunity to see your lawn green up.
Mm-hmm.
And you typically do when you start seeing those cooler temperatures. Because for the most part, we have what you call cool season grasses.
Uh-huh.
And that's why they always perform at their best early in the spring. And you see them really gain some momentum going into the fall season. So when those temperatures start getting cooler, they like it. They cozy up. The turf mm-hmm. blades cozy up. And you get all this nice... shoot development, root development, everything comes into play with fall fertilization. So think about it. I'm not opposed to even kicking it off now because the weather's nice. Just getting a little head start, a week head start's really nothing to worry about. Because we typically don't like to fertilize in the summer months, and we're technically still in the summer, but I wouldn't let that deter me by at all, by any means.
Sure.
So, with the weather, the way that it looks, and again, I always like to kick off the fall program when it comes to fertilizing our lawn in September, early September, the earlier the better. And when you use Fertilumes Lawn Food Plus Iron, that is the orange bag, Ernie. The iron element that's in this bag is what really greens the lawn up. It does. It just makes it look stellar.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see that deep green. Now, mind you, when we talk about this stuff, the three-step program, you have to have a lawn first.
Yeah.
It's not the magic bullet. You just don't put it out there and all of a sudden it's like, whoop. There it is. I don't have to do anything else.
Alakazam 1. Alakazam 2.
I like that, Ernie. You've been watching too many cartoons with Gideon, yeah, haven't you? I can tell. So, now is the best time to do it. The fall fertilization, I don't care what you do the rest of the season. If you apply two applications in the fall, and whenever you apply them, it's up to you, but September's ideal, and I'm trying to encourage you to kick it off a little earlier.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you have 6 weeks in between those two applications. So September is ideal, and then mid-November. So that gives you plenty of time in between. But you will be thankful that you took that approach. And the fall is the most important time that you can fertilize your lawn, bar none.
Right.
And any university research will tell you that you're going to benefit from it in a number of ways. When you fertilize twice in the fall, it's going to lead to better turf color. That's what I'm talking about. You get to see it green up. And it also, you'll have a longer, nice, richer color going through the fall and winter months. So you get that out of it. You get earlier spring green up. In some situations, 2 to 6 weeks earlier.
Nice.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah.
So, things start to really kick off come springtime with those two fall applications. Also, like we were saying, you get increased shoot density. You get a stronger and healthier root system that's developing. And although we start cooling down a little bit, believe it or not, when those temperatures in the lawn are upper 40s, 50s, that root system is just growing like gangbusters. Mm-hmm. And when it's growing like gangbusters, that root system, what it's doing at the same time, it's building up carbohydrates. It's building up energy to help it get through the winter months and make it a better, healthier lawn the following spring. So whatever you do, and if you're not doing anything at all, give Fertilum a chance. Give it a shot.
Sure.
And, you're going to find it at your local independently owned garden centers and nurseries that are Fertilum dealers. And most of us, if you've never done any of this yourself, nor do you, if you don't have a spreader, we're willing to loan you a spreader so you can start doing it yourself. Nothing more rewarding. You don't need to pay high lawn fees. You don't need 6 applications.
Mm-hmm.
Really, 3 is enough. And you'll see a huge difference. You really will.
This is a simple, affordable DIY project that
Absolutely.
You can do to make your life
Absolutely.
A little easier.
It's not rocket science. Not at all. Not in the least. And, like I said, Ohio State, if you ever just Google Ohio State, look up lawn fertilization during the fall, read the data. It's there. I'm not making it up. It's been there for a long, long, long time. And I've been using Fertilum for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great product. You don't need 20 steps. You don't need all that stuff. It's it's just someone trying to get into your pocket.
Yeah.
So get out to your local garden centers and nurseries today. This weekend's a great weekend. And actually, it's a good weekend for you to kind of start spotting and checking out what's arriving. Because we're not far away. I know that we've already been selling mums. We've been selling mums at Jackson Florist and Garden Center that have some color, if you're looking for some color. And again, those mums have been forced. So, you're not going to get that longevity out of them. But if you have a little get-together here in the next week or so, you got color. Also keep in mind, pick up some of the other mums. They're tight in bud, but surely they're going to open, so no worries there. And they're going to open here in another couple of weeks. And before long, you're going to see all these beautiful yellows, these deep reds, these russet colors and orange colors. It's all going to come into play, and it's going to be fall, and everyone's going to be getting really giddy and ready to change out those planters and porch pots and window boxes and start replacing some of that tired old stuff that we kind of forgot all about or let go, and start putting into those boxes and pots the ornamental peppers. My gosh, you talk about something really, really cool. Ornamental peppers have really made a major impact in recent years in doing plant combinations with the ornamental cabbage and kale, with the smaller mums. And this is what I like, too, about the garden centers, the local garden centers. We know that we can sell mums in an 8-inch pot, a 12-inch pot, a 6-inch pot, or a 4-inch pot. We got you covered for whatever size containers or whatever size window boxes you're trying to fill and decorate with. You know, you're going to get it all. Sure. You're going to get a great product. You're going to get a product that's locally grown, that's here in a tri-state area. And supporting local businesses is so, so, so important. I can't say it enough.
Because every time you do, 67 cents of every dollar spent locally stays in the local economy.
Absolutely.
You just can't do any better than that.
No, you cannot.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment when we come back.
Let's notch it up. Let's talk about our plan of the week.
Let's do it. We'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have our friend Jane from Dayton on the line. She's got a mysterious weed in the yard.
Good morning,
you
Jane.
Know, we're working our way toward Halloween. There's going to be mysterious things everywhere.
You guys are funny.
What do you think you might have?
Well, I don't know if it's imitation violets or what. They bloom in the spring. But I have been battling these dang things. Trying to get rid of them, I've used the Fertiloom weed-free zone. They turn brown on the top, but that corkscrew bottom root.
Or as mom would say, root.
Root.
Yeah.
The root. Do they, Jane, do they bloom in the spring? Did you say little lavender bloom?
Yes.
Kind of a heart-shaped leaf, kind of.
Yes.
Yeah, it's probably the violets. You know, I'm not going to go there. I did something the other day that I probably shouldn't have. But, you know, sometimes I've been known to take care of other people's lawns. But that's all I'm going to say. They're there. And that's what I sprayed the other day. My neighbor has violets, wild violets in the yard. And it's like, man, the patch is getting bigger and bigger. And I whipped out the bad old weed-free zone. And you have to use it a couple of times. And when you're going after violets, okay, especially with weed-free zone, and I'm glad you brought that up, because weed-free zone's really, for the homeowner, it's a great product that you can just pick up off the shelf. Some of the more difficult to get rid of items, like violets, perhaps Creeping Charlie, which Ernie has a lot of, it takes a couple applications, but also timing really comes into play.
Yeah, I was going to say, when's the best time to get them,
well, with,
and how far in between applications?
Well, with wild violets, great question. I like to go after those guys early in the spring when they're in bloom.
Okay.
And because when they're in bloom, they're exerting a lot of energy to go into that bloom production mode.
That makes sense.
So they're a little bit more vulnerable, okay? And then you might come back in another 10 to 14 days and reapply.
Okay.
Now, going through the summer months, you'll see it and you can spray it. And again, we always say this, you know, everybody's comfortable when you spray, you know, after we have a rainfall or you water. Those products we're talking about are more effective after a rainfall or you water because everybody's happy.
Okay.
But also what comes into play is temperature. So when you stay into that temperature range of 60 to 85, you're more effective.
Yeah, over to do that.
Over 85, it's like, you know, just put the product back on the shelf and or put it back down in the shed and wait it out. But going into the fall months, this is why I really like weed-free zone from Fertiloom, because it works in cooler temperatures. So what we're going after now, it's another timing element here, and that is, if you time it just right, and as, you know, our violets are perennial weeds. What they're going to do is they're going to shut down like the turf and other perennial weeds, and they start to take all of their energy from the leaves and work its way back down into the root structure.
To
protect itself to go through the winter months. And when that occurs and you're using weed-free zone a time or two, it gets into the plant's root structure a lot more efficiently and effectively, and that's when you really kick its butt.
Okay, so now is a good time to attack it.
I would wait a little bit.
Okay.
You know, you could go after it. I mean, the temperatures are there, and you might have to go after it again. But that concept and that time frame really comes into play.
Okay.
So hang in there with it.
Lord, I've even been taking my, that one tool that gets down into the dirt for the something else. It's a straight tool with that.
Yeah, it looks like a little snake tongue on the end, like
the
a little
old,
fork.
The old whatchamacallit.
Yeah. I've been even using that.
Ernie, that doesn't work. Use the thingamabob.
Yeah, Ernie was supposed to make me a whatchamacallit for my attic door, my pull-down door in the garage.
And never,
so I had to make my own whatchamacallit.
Well, you guys can make me another whatchamacallit because I'm going to break mine trying to get all these out of my yard.
When all else fails, get the hoochamaninny out.
Yeah.
Ernie's full of it.
Yeah, you guys are really full of it this morning. I love your show, though.
Thank you.
Tony, did you say that you have your mums in now?
Yes. And, you know, don't feel compelled to get them in unless you're looking for some color. We have some that are showing some color.
No, I want them to come in about October. I want to start blooming.
And
when
you know what?
Should.
Anytime. I have those as well. And, you know, anytime. And if you're looking for that longevity element, you want them tight. You don't even want them showing any color right now. And, you know, this is really a good question that you're bringing to the table here because. And a lot of people, they'll ask the question, how do I get mums really to winter over or come back?
Yeah, I wanted to see if the earlier I plant them, I know the better they're going to get a good root system.
Exactly. And that's the key. You know, a lot of people like to leave them on the sidewalk or the porch or the porch stoop or the steps. And then when everything's finished blooming and it's starting to wane off, then they plant it. And there's not that much energy in that plant to get rooted in.
Right. I want to get them planted, you know, before they're in full bloom.
And keep this in mind. We do not classify or categorize mums as being hardy mums anymore.
Right.
They're more of a tender perennial, but a few little steps here and there, there's some things that we can do to really help them winter over.
Right. I bought some last year that lasted through the winter.
Good.
A lot of them, I mean, I bought like a dozen mums, and most of them died. But I want to get them coming back where they're coming back winter after winter, or summer after summer, fall after fall, whatever. Last year, I was talking to you about those old mums I had going up and down my steps that spread like crazy.
Uh-huh.
I have pulled a lot of those up and kept them contained this year, and kept them cut back till July. And hopefully they'll bloom good this year, but they don't die at all.
No, yeah, some of those older mums, there's a lot more integrity involved there. It's still existent. You know, I think we've hybridized a number of varieties, and we've sacrificed some of the hardiness. But, you know, that's part of it. And, you know, the other element, too, before we let you go, and, you know, keep this in mind, too. I've experienced this myself. That when I left the mums intact going through the winter months, meaning that I wasn't compelled to go out there and do that winter cleanup.
Cut them off.
Leave them intact. And it creates winter interest in the garden, you know, anyway.
Right.
And then I would mulch them in well. Then the next season, I would go out, you know, and check it periodically. And when I saw that new growth, that basal growth, I knew, in fact, it made the winter. I would cut the old stem out and let it come on.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's what I usually do.
All right.
Also, there was one other thing I wanted to ask. Now, shoot, I can't remember what it was.
Well, that happens.
You know, the older we get, the harder it gets to remember things.
No, it's just information overload.
Yeah.
It is. But I'll be over to get some.
All right.
The concentrated weed-free zone is a whole lot better than the spray.
Well, yeah, that's a good. Ernie and I can talk about that too. That's an interesting point that you just brought up. You have a wonderful weekend, Jane.
You too, guys.
It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Love your show.
All right, thank you. Bye.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we're going to talk about our plant of the week.
Welcome back. In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie. And as a regular feature, Tony has the plant of the week this week. And you probably have seen these a lot, and maybe you don't like them. And maybe you wonder why some people have them, and then suddenly they disappear. Ornamental grasses, it's kind of a love-hate relationship with them.
I love ornamental grasses.
I do, too.
And they've been around for a while. No doubt about it. There's always new introductions.
Yeah.
They come in various sizes and shapes and various colors. So there's always some sort of an application within the landscape that we can incorporate ornamental grasses in some way, shape, fashion, or form.
Yeah.
And, you know, ornamental grasses, they add a great deal of value to our landscape. There's no doubt about it.
Sure.
And the best thing is this, that they are extremely low maintenance. You know, and
what I love
doesn't take
it.
A lot. No, and they're not fussy. They're adaptable to most soils. You know, they don't want anything that's fertile. You know, you don't even really have to fertilize them. You know, and they'll do extremely well. Ornamental grasses, they can be used as a standalone plant specimen by itself. They can also be used in a mass planting and make a nice impact. They can also be used for privacy, some sort of screening. So there's a number of grasses that are available for various applications. So this plant is so versatile. And the thing of it is, now, I've never really talked to too many of my cohorts here in the industry about ornamental grasses in any great detail, but I'm somewhat starting to see it seems as if people aren't gravitating towards them, or they think there's only certain types and that's all that there are. I'm here to tell you there's a number of different grasses that will give you a really cool, unique look throughout the landscape. You know, they're not all 4 foot tall or 6 foot tall. There's some that are just a couple of feet tall. There's some that are two to three feet tall. Various colors, and we're going to talk about some of those. And you can see these, you know, I put some different specimens here on our Facebook page. So that's a great place to get connected with us and check out exactly what it is what we're talking about. And I know there are some of those that, you know, I don't do Facebook, and that's okay. But you're just going to have this envision of what we're talking about as we cover some really cool and different varieties. So, you know, get out to your local garden centers and nurseries and see and check out the ornamental grasses. And the reason why I'm putting some emphasis on it now is because the final act is yet to occur with most of our ornamental grasses. The final show of the season, or you can call it the encore, whatever it is you want to term it as being, is that you're going to start seeing these beautiful plumes, these seed heads starting to raise up above the turf or the grass itself and just give you a really cool and unique look. In some cases, it's going to have a bronzy look or a reddish look or a tan look, and it all depends upon the type of grass. We have miscanthus grasses. We have pinnacetums. They're easy to distinguish amongst one another. The pinnacetums always have like this little bunny tail type blooms. And we're going to cover some of these. And again, get on your Facebook page because I talked about them. I've labeled them as what they are. And take that information and go out to your local garden centers and nurseries and say, hey, can you get this if you don't already have it on hand? But if you look on our Facebook page, one of my favorites, and I've had this before, it's a little different type of grass. Some people will call it a monkey grass, like a lily turf, but it's not really liriope. But it's called black mondo grass. The problem is we are about as far north as you can bring it. And I used to have a beautiful bed of this. However, it didn't fare too well. It's like I said, we're borderline with it, but it's called black mondo grass. And it is a, is it really black? Perhaps not. Maybe it's a real deep, deep purple that looks black, but nonetheless it's very interesting. And if you can plant that somewhere in a protected area, which I had it in, it was beautiful. It was the winter of 2012 that kind of tore it up a little. So knowing those kind of things as a gardener, be it if you're a novice gardener or an experienced gardener, do not be afraid to give things a try. You know, get that look. You may be really successful with it, And again, you may not be, but always be willing to give it a try and always know what, you know, can potentially happen. And as long as you do that and are aware of that, you're never let down. You know, a lot of times people say, oh, I can't grow that, it died. You know, well, give it a shot. You know, we have all these little microclimates mm-hmm. in and around our homes. But the black Mondo grass is really cool stuff. Another one is another plant that's very interesting type of grass, and it's a native grass, actually, and it's called Northern Sea Oats. And you can see those little dangling pods.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very interesting. A different type of grass. And it doesn't get very, very tall, a couple of feet, 2 to 3 feet. And it, too, is a welcoming plant in the landscape, and it has a different look, and it's not like what everybody else has. So perhaps a family member, a friend, or somebody visiting your house sees something like this, they're going to stop and say, oh, that's really cool. What is that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not what people are typically accustomed to seeing. So the Northern Sea Oats is really another nice grass that I think is of interest. Another one of my favorites, too. Actually, I shot this from my yard. You can see this is a Japanese forest grass. It's called Hakana Kloa. Beautiful texture, this grass. And you talk about a grass that can really soften up some hardscapes. And we'll be talking about some hardscapes when Margie from Bushelman Supply comes in. But, you know, hardscaping with beautiful stone and so forth, grasses like this really accentuate that look. It just accents it like nobody's business. Japanese forest grass, as it gets older, it starts to develop. It's very, very reliable. It takes this billowing effect, Ernie, and it just layers out. It layers out, kind of like your midsection, just layers out, gets out over the belt area.
The Dunlap disease.
Yes, absolutely. So that is one of my favorite grasses, and you're no doubt about it. You'll find it at some of your local garden centers and nurseries.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that comes to mind that has recently taken center stage to a degree is it's a Pennisetum called Redhead. And if you look at the plumes on this, they're just drop dead gorgeous. They really are. So Pennisetum Redhead, it's kind of a medium grower. It's kind of fountain-like, but mounding at the same time. And it's a little bit of an earlier bloomer. It has these smoky, like purple-looking seed heads. Mm-hmm. It's about 3 foot in height, give or take. But very attractive, to say the least. And again, that's Pennisetum Redhead. You like redheads, don't you?
I do.
I thought you said that one time. I just thought I'd throw that out there.
But I've been following along as you've been describing these, and you have all these posted on our In and Around the House Facebook page. Mm-hmm. But I got to tell you, two of my favorites, I love the Miscanthus, which I told you that
uh-huh.
we want to add to our hill.
Right.
But that Elijah Blue, I keep coming back to.
The Festuca.
Yes. That is a beautiful one.
Nice. It's like a steel blue color.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it doesn't get very tall. You know, and mm-hmm. again, these are various types of grasses that give you wonderful textures and right. color. I'm posting color here.
Yeah.
You know, not every grass, ornamental grass that we see or buy is always green.
Sure.
So the sky's the limit with ornamental grasses. And when they put on that show late in the fall with those wonderful seed heads, that's the encore of the season. Mm-hmm. You get seasonal interest here.
Yeah, I have to be honest here. When I look to solve that problem with the hill, I'm thinking I just have to get something up there to fill it up that I don't mm-hmm. have to mess with cutting the grass. Then the easiest, quickest thing you see, and then you post this, and I'm thinking, boy, two or three of these different colors. Now, are all these... I guess
spit it out. Get
I am. I guess I'm trying to ask about our zone here. Will all of these grow in our zone?
Yes, I wouldn't put anything on here other than the fact when I talk to you about the first one, the black Mondo grass.
Yeah.
You're playing Russian roulette, but it's worth it.
Is the pink moly grass? Am I saying
that is correct? Another one that
That's
I
gorgeous.
It's awesome. It's awesome. As we trek through here, that is another one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And I will tell you this. I was up at the Beringer Crawford Museum over in the DeVue Park.
Mm-hmm.
It was a few years ago. And I was driving out of the back parking lot, and I saw that pink muley grass. I had to stop. I backed up.
Yeah.
I got my phone out.
Back that thing up.
So I pulled out my cell phone and started taking some photographs of it. And ironically, that was the winter of 2012 that we had, that following winter.
Mm-hmm.
And I immediately went up there the next season, you know, when I knew things were breaking and flushing out and putting on growth, because I wanted to see, did you make it, buddy?
Right.
Did you make the winter?
Mm-hmm.
Because I always was a little suspect of it. You know, and however, it was rooted in well enough that, yeah, the winter was probably harsh on it, but still, it was there, and it made it back.
When's the best time to put these in the ground?
Well, stuff like the pink muley grass,
mm-hmm.
And you take the Mondo grass, the earlier in the season, the better, because you're allowing it a lot more time to get rooted in.
Gotcha.
That's the key. Some of the other grasses, no, they're going to make it. And right. Then, you know, once you get them in, you know, do the necessary mulching that's needed.
Sure.
That's going to also help keep it from heaving out of the ground during the winter months. And it keeps the soil constant, and that's mm-hmm. what we want. Also, very important, when you plant ornamental grasses, you do not want those residing in a spot that stays wet all the time, especially in the winter months. Mm-hmm. Now, the northern sea oats, they can take a little bit of moisture, and so sure. can some of your carexes, your sedges. But most of what we have here, no. What's on our Facebook page, mm-hmm. you know, you don't want them hanging out in a wet place throughout the winter months.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We've been talking about our plant of the week, and Tony has filled our in and around the house Facebook page with all these beautiful ornamental grasses. Take a few minutes and jump on to our Facebook page and check those out. We're going to continue our discussion about those as we await Margie from Bushelman Supply. We'll be here at 8:00 to talk a little bit about hardscape. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We've been talking about our plant of the week, and there's so many of them to discuss. We're going to continue our conversation about ornamental grasses.
Oh, most definitely. And we were kind of highlighting what we put on the Facebook page, and we left off over there with the Festuca, the Elijah Blue. It's got that nice, like, cobalt stain, or kind of a stainless steel-looking blue in it. Really, really, really cool. Also, some of the miscanthus are really nice, and some of those, you know, they get a fair amount of height on them. And another one that's been really popular in recent years is the zebra grass. And you can always identify zebra grass by the horizontal cream bands that are on the blades themselves. Mm-hmm. Very, very attractive, to say the least. And creates a lot of interest in the garden as well. And that kind of like... it's a standalone in a big, like, perennial bed of some sort is very mm-hmm. attractive. And there's also a shorter version of it, little zebra. So you can choose one of the two. And that one, usually the zebra grass, you're going to see that around 5 to 7 feet in height and probably 4 feet or so wide, at least, you know, over time. But very attractive. I've had that before, and I want to point this out. It can get a little lazy if it gets a little too much shade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my backyard has quite a bit of shade in it, or it used to, but things have changed over the years. But I noticed a little bit of shade can get a little lazy late in the season, but still, nonetheless, a really, really attractive grass. So look for the zebra grass. Also, we were talking about, you know, the Pennisetum redhead. Well, here's another family member, cousin. And that is Pennisetum hamlin. And this has been around a while. And I have always liked this grass because the texture of it is really fine. It's kind of dainty. It's mounding, but yet kind of takes on that fountain look. And the beauty of this particular grass is its plumes. You know, they look like these little bunny tails, little cat tails.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of, you know, that's a telltale sign that it's in the Pennisetum family when you see those. And a lot of us like the Pennisetum rubrum, which is the red grass that we find all the time during the spring months at our local garden centers and nurseries with the real red foliage and gets a nice cattail blooms later in the season. Unfortunately, that is not hardy here. If we could make that hardy mm-hmm. here, we would be millionaires.
So I'm assuming that since these are all ornamental grasses, that they all prefer full sun, all day sun?
For the most part, yes. Yeah. Yes, and that's important, and I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, you need a majority of sun for your ornamental grasses to really give you that spectacular show throughout the season. Talking about Hamlin, the beauty of Hamlin is it's got a lot of applications for the landscape, you know, because it doesn't get really too big, nor is it small, but, you know, it's around the 2-foot range, so it's well-behaved. This, however, is a grass that does not want to stay wet during the winter months. If it does, you might see that it doesn't come back favorably, but still, don't let that deter you and keep you from picking up this particular grass. It's a great one.
And you can get these at your locally owned, independently operated garden center.
Absolutely. And that's what it's all about. And, you know, that's where you're going to find your best selection of grasses, you know. Some of the boxes, they don't carry those varieties. It's just some of the everyday stuff that you find. But if you want to get into the nitty-gritty part of it, you got to go to your local garden centers and nurseries. Another favorite one here, Ernie, and I did this with two photographs on our Facebook page, is Calamagrostis carafoester, which is a feather reed grass. And it has a really unique look about it. And it's used by a lot of landscapers. And once it's in the ground for a season or so, you really start to get the appreciation for the beauty that it provides in the landscape. It has a really narrow profile. You know, it gets around 4 foot in height and about a 2 foot spread. And if you look at this, it's great as a standalone, and you can see it around some boulders.
Right.
You know, we were talking about how it softens up hardscapes, but this also gives it a little bit of height and more structure. And the next photograph, you can see it used in a mass planting. So, you know, using it as a standalone or in a mass planting or as a border, as an accent, you can't go wrong with carafoester. It's a great grass. People love it. They really do. Another interesting one, and I just planted some this year, and that is called blue gramma grass. I'm not even going to try and pronounce the botanical name, but Butulua gracilis, if I say that right. But it's called Blonde Ambition. And if you look at the plumes on this particular grass, really interesting. They look like little flags, little pennants.
Yeah, I was just noticing.
And this blue gramma grass is really cool. And this one's called Blonde Ambition. I just planted a couple in my landscape this year.
Mm-hmm.
I love this look. It's totally unique. It's not like your other grasses. It gets about 3 foot in height. And I will tell you where there's a little bed of this, if you want to see it and you're traveling about, is if you're ever over in Spring Grove Cemetery, there's a nice bed right there by the Gwen Mooney Funeral Home.
Okay.
Of this particular variety of grass.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. I love it. It's different. And it's kind of an attention getter, to say the least.
Sure.
The blue grandma grass.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We are still talking about our plants of the week because there's so many ornamental grasses to choose from. And Tony, we have John on the line from Shelbyville. We're going to come back to him right after the break about redesigning a landscape and where to start. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've been talking about ornamental grasses, Tony, and mentioned a little bit about hardscapes. And we have John on the line from Shelbyville. He's got a question for you about redesigning this landscape. Hi, John. Thanks for hanging on.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir. So I live in Doville, Kentucky, and we don't have any landscaping in front of our house, nothing.
Okay.
So we're starting with a blank canvas.
That's perfect.
Yes, sir. I've got some, you know, plants or shrubs in mind that I want to use, but the grass goes right up to the house. So
okay. We
need to get rid of that. What do you recommend? I don't want grass coming back. So.
Right. Great question. And, you know, this is part of the whole design element of establishing a new bed, and especially up close to the house, you know, and we'll talk about the plants in a moment. But first, you know, what I would do is take an old garden hose and find one that's at least 75 feet, you know, or if you put two 50s together. And this is where you will lay that out in such a way, you know, kind of visualize how you want those beds to look. And don't do just straight lines. That's boring. You know, take that hose and kind of make a nice meandering kind of design to where, like, if you were mowing, you can mow easily and you have a nice sizable or established bed. And once you get that design, what you can do, leave the hose there or take spray paint and follow that contour of the hose and then pull the hose up. And then everything from where you sprayed in towards the house, spray it with Kills All and let it kill all the turf.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
And that's a great way to start mapping out the design of the bed itself. And then from that point forth, once everything dies off, you can turn it in. You can scrape it or do whatever. You can also bring in, you might need to bring in some good soil too, or some soil amendments. I don't know what your soil's like.
Right.
And this would be a good time for you to take a soil sample and just find out exactly what the pH level is and what your soil is comprised of.
Okay.
So you can certainly do that with your extension office. But when you have that area and everything's killed off, you can define the edge of that bed with a spade and get a nice edge on it, bring in some peat moss or some pine fines, and turn that stuff into the soil, the existing soil, and you'll have a nice established bed to start with. And anytime you plant from that point forth, you don't need to do anything special.
Okay.
Now, what kind of plants do you have in mind?
Well, for the shrubs, boxwood.
Perfect. Okay. Great evergreen. Anything else?
I tell you what, I like what Cracker Barrel does. If that makes if you've been to Cracker Barrel.
Well, tell me what they do. Great eggs, good biscuits and gravy. That's what I know. That anyway, go ahead.
But yeah, I know the one there where we live at. They've got beautiful landscaping, mm-hmm. and they've got boxwoods, and it looks like
right.
some
right.
I don't know what they're called. They look like some kind of long grass, about a foot tall.
Well, you know what? Take a photo of it. And if you, I don't know if you get on Facebook or not, you're certainly welcome to email us. And, you know, I can give you some tips or hints or some things you might want to consider. And when you do all this, you know, get a piece of paper or a graph paper and measure your beds, measure the areas you're working with and draw it out. And don't try and tackle everything at once. Do the front, then work on the sides, then work on the back. At my age, I'll overwhelm myself and wear myself out just thinking about what I have to do. So, you know, you'd eat an elephant, Ernie would tell you, one bite at a time.
Man.
And it'd be a lot more enjoyable for you as you progress and make this all come together.
Right.
And, you know, look at your exposure. Go out on a day like today. Go out at 9 o'clock and write down and chart it. You know, I got sun here. I got shade over here. Go out at 10 or go out at 11. Write it down. And know what kind of sun exposure you get all around your home, and that is going to come into play with the types of plants that you choose.
Right. Well, we get the morning sun on the back of the house, the evening sun on the front of the house.
Right. And that's going to give you the idea of what's going to best be suited. You know, you only don't want to do this once. You don't want to come back and do it a second time. And I will also tell you this. Do not feel compelled to fill that area up with a lot of plants.
Right.
Know what that plant's capable of growing to on an average height and width. Mm-hmm. Now, keep in mind, not everything grows to 2 foot and quits. You know, nothing quits growing until the day it dies. But
right.
allow yourself some space. Allow those plants to come in and fill that room up for you. Because if you put too much in there to get that instant effect, I can guarantee you, you're going to be pulling a lot of it out.
Right.
But have fun. You know, when you got a clean slate to work with, nothing better.
Thank you. Uh-huh. And we want to go ahead and start getting some of the shrubs. I don't know how long we have to wait for that stuff you said to put down to kill the grass, but I don't.
Where are you calling from?
Well, I'm a truck driver, so I go through here every Saturday. That's why I listen to you guys.
Oh, you go through the area. Are you on 75 a lot?
Yes, sir.
So what part of Kentucky are you from?
Shelbyville.
Okay.
Louisville. And Frank, I don't know if you ever heard of Frank Oddie.
Yeah, great nursery. Yeah.
They started their Labor Day sale yesterday. A lot of people wait every year for the sale. Everything's half off.
Right. Well, there you go. Yeah, In the fall is the best time to plant. Take some photographs, but please do this for me. Take that. You're getting ammunition. You're taking in data to Frank Oddie Nursery, and you're saying, this is what I have. When you do that, they're going to be a lot more helpful for you.
Okay.
You know, so, well, good luck. Keep us in the loop. Let us know how it goes.
Yeah, if you got time, I got another question
for
you.
Sure.
Okay. I have rose bushes on the side of my house.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, I know one of them is over 40 years old.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, my granny planted it, and my aunt planted the other one, so they're probably 25.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
25 years old. I need to move them.
Okay.
For one thing, they're too close to the house.
Right.
I have a pepper stone home, and they're right up against the stone.
Okay.
And I need to move them. So what's the best time, and what do I do to keep from killing them?
We're getting close to, this is my spin on moving rose bushes. I like to move rose bushes late winter, early spring.
Okay,
and for that reason, at the same time, when I lift the rose bush out, I know that I'm not going to get all of its root structure, and you're probably not going to either. Hopefully you do as much as you can. And when you move them late winter, early spring, I think things are best suited for that rose bush. There's less stress on that rose bush, and at the same token, you're going to be cutting it back. All right? Okay. Right now, if you were to make that move, you might pull it off, but try and get as much of the root structure as you can.
Mm-hmm.
However, if I were in your shoes and those were grannies, those rose bushes, I would do that late winter, early spring. I would not take any risk whatsoever. You probably have some old-fashioned type roses there that are very fragrant, I would say the least.
Mm-hmm.
So, but moving them now, you know, you're going to stress them out a little bit, and you're going to have to cut them back somewhat, and then you're going to have to rely on them getting rooted in.
Okay.
So I would lean towards late winter, early spring.
Okay.
If they were my rose bushes.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, hey, keep us in the loop. Good to talk with you, and thanks for tuning in to us as you're driving through Dodge.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Bye. Hey, John.
All right.
749 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. Margie from Bushman Supply is in with us. We're going to get her settled in, and when we come back, we'll start talking about some hardscapes and other items. We'll be right back.
It's time to ask a pro with In and Around the House on B105.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and our friend Margie from Bushelman Supply has joined us again. Welcome back, Margie.
Good morning. I've been looking forward to this all week.
Yeah, it's been a while since you've been in.
You've been looking forward to bringing us in breakfast.
Well, I have fun doing this. I love doing this.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to have you in. Mm-hmm. It really is. You're like family now. I mean,
yeah. Hey, that could be bad.
Well, I don't know. You keep bringing us food. Always happy to see those family members that feed you.
Yeah. And inviting us to a big food event.
Yeah.
You can't beat it.
Nope. Yeah. Nope. But we have talked last couple of weeks about how quickly summer has just slipped by. And now getting ready for the fall, and this is the perfect time for fire pits.
It is outdoor living,
and everybody's comfortable, and great time to come see you.
Yep. John and I were just talking when we came in. It feels like fall today.
It does.
And the leaves are already starting to fall.
Yep.
We're already blowing leaves at home.
I noticed that the other day when I was out cutting the grass. I just thought, well, that's odd. It's middle of August, and I'm not used to seeing leaves on the ground yet.
Well, the other thing, too, with some of the wind we've had, we have to pick up limbs every time we get a storm.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's a good, your fire pits can be functional, too. You can get rid of all that stuff.
Sure, it's good kindling.
Yeah.
Fire starter stuff.
Well, and I think in the city, don't you have to bundle all that stuff up and pay to have Rumpke haul it away?
I'm not sure about my city, but it usually makes its way right to the fire pit.
It never makes its way to the curb. We live out in the country, so, we don't have to do that either, but
I think they're pretty good about it. Now, my neighbor across the street, he'll do just exactly what you said. He'll bundle it up, but I don't know if there's an added fee.
I think they'll only take stuff up to four feet or something.
You know this. If you take care of your garbage man at Christmas time and other various times, he'll take anything.
Well, that's probably
that's the secret. How well you take care of your garbage man and the recycle guy. I hope some people are picking up on that hint. So, but anyway, yeah, you're right. There's probably some limitations there.
Yeah. So, but no, it's time, and it's time to think about. It's not that far away, so you need to get out there and look inside. Get inside the garage, close the garage door, and see if you have any leaks, any sunlight. Because if you do, then air can get in.
Mm-hmm.
So you've only got about another month or two to finish up outside projects and think about getting that door winterized. So
you know, while you were talking about that, describing it, I was just thinking probably a good idea for you to stand inside the garage and open and close your garage door and listen.
Yep. Because if it's making a whole bunch of noise, something needs to be oiled or greased or something.
Mm-hmm.
So
do you do that?
I do.
Do
we use, and Margie pointed this out when she first came on the show with us, that's the largest moving part in your house.
Yep.
And we use our garage door very, very easily, probably 6-7 times a day.
Really?
Just to go in and out.
Oh, we've got a lot of customers that use their garage door instead of their doors. Mm-hmm. I mean, they go in and out.
Well, I'm one of those, yeah.
Yeah. You think about how many times it goes up and down.
Yeah. At least I asked the other day. She goes, you notice no one ever comes to our front door anymore? And I said, well, it's because we're always on the porch, but that's how we know that we don't know them, is they come to the front door.
Yeah, there you go. Yep.
Everyone comes to the side door, or when I'm working down in the basement, I'll just open the garage door and, you know, suddenly turn around and there'll be somebody I know, a friend of mine. And I go, well, the garage door was open. But we use it all the time.
Yeah,
and that's why it's important.
Well, it wasn't long ago. You guys just repaired mine.
Yeah,
with the new spring. New spring, yes.
Yeah.
So, that might be my third set of springs.
Yeah. Well, you know, too, if a spring breaks, we can upsize a new spring. Because a spring cycle on a new door is between 12,000 and 15,000 cycles, is what they come with. So we can upsize it to like a 25,000 cycle spring. And it doesn't really cost maybe but an extra 10 or 20 bucks.
So that's like going through a drive-thru at McDonald's. You want a biggie size?
Yeah, there you go.
Is that what we're doing?
There you go.
You want a biggie spring with that?
We have commercial doors that have 100,000 cycle springs. And we have one commercial customer who has 100,000 cycle springs, and we have to replace them twice a year.
Wow.
Wow, yeah, that's using it a lot.
Yeah,
it is. You like him, don't you?
Yeah. And they're big springs, too, let me tell you.
I'll biggie size that.
Those are Godzilla-sized springs.
Whoa, that's interesting. So when do you have the sale? I know that will be coming up in another month, maybe, or next month sometime.
Truckload sale, we always do it. You know how your other customer was saying about nursery always has their sale at the same time. Well, we do the same thing with the truckload sale. It's always usually that last week or so of September, and then we have till about the second week of October to get all the orders in. And Raynor allows every dealer to do a truckload sale once a year, and then they give us special discounting. So
how long does the customer have to place an order?
Till this year, October 13th.
The 13th,
yeah.
Okay.
Any orders for the truckload sale have to be placed by October 13th, and I think the sale starts September 21st.
And that would include, too, if you want to have a special color put on a door.
Yeah, it's for the whole door order. It doesn't matter, like, if you've done anything special to it or whatever.
Well, you know, I'm like that person that goes to the dentist, and she keeps looking at
putting
that
it
tooth.
Off.
That keeps looking at that tooth. It's like, I want to get this tooth one day. I need to get that new garage door one day. Yeah, old Doc Drew used to tell me, I'm going to get that tooth. Come heck or high water there, you know, and I was like, yeah. But like me, well, I just got the new springs.
Yeah, there you go. So now you've got it.
Craig's like, well, I don't know.
I know. Did he tell you? I think your door's in pretty good shape from what he said.
That's what he said. Yeah. And, you know, and I've been chomping at the bit for how long about a new garage door?
Well, and the only problem with your door that you know, from what he has said, is the fact that it's not got any insulation value.
No, not at all.
But as far as the quality of the door. And
It's still in decent shape for as old as it is. And I guess I'm fortunate. You know, I know that some of the screws and various hardware pieces on it, you know, I can turn it and it keeps turning. So it doesn't tighten.
Twist it out.
Yeah. It's kind of, it's close. Yeah. I know it's close, you know. Yeah.
Well, you know, though, it's surprising. The older doors, truthfully, are made a whole lot better.
Oh, I know they are. New doors. Well, I know
not,
that.
Not, well, they don't really make wood doors too much anymore, but you can't get good lumber anymore. I mean, you know, the old doors used to be, like, the bottom rails were 5 and 6 inches tall, mm-hmm. and the panels were plywood, and you can't get that anymore. You just can't get it. It's not available.
Well, I know one thing. It's in my door, or our door, is in decent shape. But I know when it's cold out.
Yeah, it's cold.
I mean, it looks like it's frosty inside.
Yeah.
It's like,
oh, well, and you can always tell too. Like if you're having like pop or something freeze in the garage. Yep, that's it. You don't have any insulation value. So
right. No.
And the doors really, the new doors with the new technology. I mean, it really is amazing. They really make a big difference. And I think I told you this. I think the last time we did. We did garage doors for one of the truck terminals up in Tri-County, and we had bid it for several years, and we finally got him to buy new doors. And he called me back that following year and told me he cut his energy. He had an energy savings.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember now if it was 15% or if it was more than that. But I mean, for a commercial company, even
right.
I mean, 15% is significant. So
that's huge.
Yeah.
And you multiply that out over several years. That's a huge return.
Well, and the other thing is we used to be up there like through the winter, especially when they were using their doors all the time. We used to be up there like maybe at least once every 2 weeks. We might have a service call from them now, maybe twice a year.
Dang.
Well, that's part of what you give up when you sell a new job. You know, you're giving up the service, but you're doing a better job, I think, for the customer.
Absolutely.
Because our goal is always to do the best job we can do, but to save the customer as much money as we can.
Right. No, there's no doubt about that. That's a great return on investment.
Oh, yeah.
In the long run, it's huge.
Yeah.
Real quick, are there any type of, you talk about a job like that. Are there any type of government incentives?
They used to give that energy tax savings credit thing.
Right.
Yeah, on garage doors. And it used to be up to $1,500.
Wow.
And I don't know why they took that away, because they're always wanting people to put money back in the economy. And like you said, it's the largest moving door, piece in the house.
Right.
And it really can be significant. And they only did that for a couple years, and I think it still might be on geothermal stuff and stuff like that, but it doesn't.
I always miss those programs. Maybe I just put in some windows. Oh, no, there aren't any incentives. So I put in windows.
Furnace too, and windows.
I was going to say, we capitalized on that because we have baseboard heaters at home, because we don't have natural gas. And so when they did that, we put in those Mitsubishi units, because we never had air conditioning. And we were able to get $1,500 back, which was nice. I mean, that was probably 25% of what it cost.
Beats a blank.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it does.
Yeah.
It would be like putting the carrot out there with my garage door.
Yeah,
making me
tempting
me more so.
Well, and our carrot right now is still, Raynor's still doing the 100, now this is only on the Aspen series, but they're still giving $125 off on regular prices for singles and $225 off on regular prices for doubles.
Hmm.
And that's pretty significant.
Yeah,
it really is.
So, I know I like
and
our door.
That's their best line, I think, is the Aspen.
No, so. And the Raynor door that you guys did for us, and we say it all the time, it's night and day.
Yeah.
I love that door.
Yeah.
It's quiet. It's, you know, it keeps the garage cool, our delivery area. It keeps it warm in the winter. The old door, you could see through it. So that was one of those, Ernie, you go inside and start peering out.
Yeah, little lines of daylight.
Is it raining outside? I don't know. Look through the door.
Let me kick this in. I'll get inside real quick. You don't have to worry about locking yourself out.
Yeah. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Margie from Bushelman Supply in with us again today. You can get to them at bushelman.com, or their phone number is 513-771-9121. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Our friend Margie from Buschelman Supply has joined us again today. You can get to their website at Buschelman.com or call them at 513-771-9121. And we've been talking a little bit about garage doors, but you guys also have an awful lot more to offer. I was just looking through your web page, website again, and all those stones and all those beautiful landscape items. That's gorgeous stuff.
Thank you. We think so. I'm all excited because you were talking about the other guy about he's got a clean slate. We're going to redo all our landscape.
Are you really?
Yeah, because it's about 20, 25 years old, and we live in the woods. And right in the middle of the front yard is a huge oak tree
that
loses acorns. Like, and then when you walk on them, it's like walking on ball bearings.
Crunch.
Since I'm a big klutz to start with.
but that can make it a little treacherous.
Oh, yeah.
I'm hoping Tony has a leftover oak tree at the end of the season. I've already gotten the hole dug for it.
Oh, I was going to say you guys should come up because we have 69 acres. You can come dig anything you want. We have all kinds of stuff.
Did you hear that, Ernie?
I did.
There you go.
We have an oak in the backyard that we planted when we were first moved there.
Yeah.
And it is huge.
Nice.
If we ever get an oak disease, we're going to be screwed. About 45% of our woods is dead ash now. So if we ever get an oak blight, we're in real trouble.
Yeah, isn't that something?
It's awful.
It's crazy. It's amazing what insects can do.
Oh, I know.
Devastating. But
one of the things I wanted to ask you is on your website, Buschelman.com, you have several different fireplaces, not fire pits, but fireplaces that people can build on their patios.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, the two that we sell, the one is basically, if you think of Lincoln Logs, that's about what it is. But it's lightweight stuff, and you can throw it together. The base you can throw together in about an hour and a half or 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I don't like about that one is you have to finish it. So you have to put on a man-made veneer stone stucco it or something like that.
I was just going to tell you, I'm not a finisher, so maybe that's not for me.
Well, the other one is a pavestone product, and it's all made out of rumble wall. And when you're finished, you can use the fireplace. It's done. Everything you need is in the kit. And it has a stainless steel insert.
Oh.
So that one I like the best because I think it's the most user-friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can put that one together. So.
And once you get it assembled, that's it. And it all comes in a kit?
Yep. And everything's there. Everything you need. The glue, the blocks, the stainless steel insert, the chimney pieces, the chimney top, everything. Mm-hmm. And I think this is something I wanted to talk about too because this week we've had two people in particular that have come in with projects, and I mean literally they were thinking they had to spend thousands of dollars.
Right.
And not.
Yeah,
I mean,
not the case.
No. One guy, he had a fire pit. He was going to put stone. His fire pit was about 3 feet, and he wanted to have a fire pit area that was going to be 12 feet in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, literally he was thinking thousands of dollars, and it's not. I mean, he can do everything he wanted to do for about maybe $1,000, you know, maybe 800.
Right.
He didn't get to the point where he picked a finished stone of a flagstone, but most of our flags run about $340 to maybe $470 a ton, and you get about, well, it depends on the stone, but say you get about 90 square feet out of a ton.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, it's maybe $5 a square foot. So, you know, just do some simple math. If you've got 120 square feet and it's $5 a square foot, it's maybe going to be $600 worth of stone.
Right. Can you get pretty close when you give someone an estimate
that?
And, you know, you just raised a valid point.
It's all math. And the formulas cannot be wrong.
I'm out.
Now, the measurements can be wrong because when somebody will say, I need gravel for this area, it's about, and I jump right in and I tell them, if it's about and it's not exact, then you need to know the estimate I'm giving you
is about.
Yeah.
A couple years ago, we were down at Jackson, and I was talking to Tony and his dad, and someone had walked up to him while we were standing there and said, I need to get some grass seed. And Tony's dad said, well, how much area are you trying to cover? And the guy said, man, about like from those potted plants to that maybe about that size. And dad,
what did my dad say?
You got to love your dad.
You got to remember this.
Yeah.
Dad looks at Tony and goes, you going to take care of this, Tony? I got to go.
Is that what? Okay. Yeah.
And he turned Tony and walked away.
Yeah, my dad used to do that too.
Here, Tony will help you.
I got to go do something. Tony will take care of this.
My dad is notorious for that. Yes.
Yeah. So about will get you all about that much.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and it helps us too because in the office, we have 2x2 tiles, square tiles in the ceiling. So I always tell them, tell me how many tiles. Because then we're tying it down to 2 feet increments.
Right.
But so you know, measure first.
Yeah.
I think people have a tendency, they get a little apprehensive. They don't ask enough questions.
Right.
They're intimidated in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And don't be.
No.
You know, just ask questions. That's the more information that you can get, the better you can assess the situation and make a sound, informed decision.
I can't agree with you more. There are more people who are worried about giving the appearance that they don't know what they're doing as opposed to asking for help.
And you know what? Most of those would be male.
I am the furthest from that point. Now, the other day, I was just at the party source, and I went into the humidor, and I told a guy, hey, I'm a novice. I don't know anything about cigars. Just give me a little insight. And there were some other guys in there. I was okay with that. I'm a novice. Yeah. We all are novice at some point in time.
Well, that's right. Everybody's got their strong suit.
You're right. We're there to help you.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of locally owned businesses yours, like ours, and everybody else that's a part of in and around the house. We're there to help you. We're not there to intimidate, or we want you to be successful.
Well, you know what? Another important point, too, is we aren't there to be big corporate people and make money hand over fist, because trust me, we could make a lot more money working for somebody else and not working 60 and 70 hours a week.
Right. No.
We do it because we love it. I love my job.
Right. And we don't have shareholders breathing over our neck. Like, you guys got to meet sales. Right. You know, I want some return.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's, and everyone thinks when you're in business, you're rolling in money.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I don't know, but they do.
You know, somebody the other day asked me, why can't you deliver that boulder for nothing?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
You know what I did? This is bad. I went up and got my insurance policy.
Yep,
there you go. And I showed her my workers' comp annual payment. Yeah, my premium. I said, this is why.
One of my guys just ran over something and punctured a sidewall on the loader.
Mm-hmm.
$1,800 later, we hit a new tire on the loader. It's like, you're right. I mean,
it's a part of doing business.
Yeah.
You know, and if we're not, and if we don't cover our costs,
we're not going to be here.
We're not going to rip you off. But we do have to cover our costs, so we're still there for you to come in and visit.
Well, our job as owners is to make a profit and to make sure we have a good, healthy, safe place for our customers and our employees.
Absolutely. So, everybody
wins. But we have to make a profit or we aren't going to be there.
No, you won't be there. No. Nothing worse when you say, oh, wow, they're going out of business. Gosh, I wish they were still there. Yeah. I wish they were still there.
Swollens.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Bob still hasn't recovered.
Yeah, that's another family-owned business.
Exactly.
That you wish was still there.
Yeah.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Margie from Bushelman Supply is in with us. We've got a couple of other things we're going to talk with her about. You can go to their website at bushelman.com. You can call them at 513-771-9121. And they're located at, am I saying this right, 250 Marion Road?
Yep, that's correct.
250 Marion Road, Cincinnati. We need to pause. We'll be right back.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Got our friend Margie from Bushman Supply in with us, and we were talking about this is the perfect time to start looking at some of the things you might be wanting to add to your landscape, your yard, and hardscapes. And Tony and Margie were going to talk a little bit about a couple of things.
I liked what you said in the break, you know, the bubbling stones. It's not that they bubble, but they serve as a fountain,
right,
you know,
exactly.
And it's a nice way to add a water feature to the landscape, and especially without something that has pooling water.
Right. You can do, and this goes back to where we were talking about people think things are really expensive. One of the things you want to bear in mind, and this is not always true, but it's a good rule of thumb. If a project's going to cost, say, $12,000, you get an estimate from somebody, you can divide that in thirds, and you can kind of think in your mind that the product is going to be about $4,000 and the labor's going to be about $8,000. That's usually pretty true as far as a rule of thumb. The material's about a third, labor's about two-thirds. Now, labor also includes delivery, equipment, and loading time, unloading time, and actual job time. So, but as a consumer, if you're willing to take on that part, you can save a lot of money. But a bubbling boulder, and for some reason customers think these are real expensive, you can do a nice bubbling boulder feature for about $1,200. And, I mean, you can do it for a lot less if you downsize it significantly, but you can have a nice feature for about $1,200.
Yeah, that's an added value to the home,
yes,
you know, in the landscape.
Yeah.
And it gives it such curb appeal.
Yeah, it does.
And people like those kind of features.
Yeah.
They like that natural look. They don't want that contrived, you know.
Right.
This has been precast and preformed. The natural look when it comes to hardscaping,
yes,
is the in trend.
Yes, it is.
And I don't think it's going to go away.
No, I don't either. And what's nice about hardscapes, because this happens a lot to me, is they're not like plants. They don't die. They're there for structure.
Right.
7.9 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Margie from Bushman Supply in with us. And Margie and Tony, we have Karen from Florence on the line who has a garage door question for you. Hi, Karen. Thanks for hanging on. What's going on with your garage door?
Well, we've been having this problem for a while, and I thought, well, next time she's there, I wanted to ask. Our garage door, the eye on the garage door, when it, you know,
the photo eye, the safety photo eye. Okay,
yeah.
All right.
On, our house faces to the west, so we get the hot afternoon sun.
Yep.
So on the, like, if you're facing the garage door on the left hand side, the sun hits it in the afternoon, and when we open it up, we have trouble closing it.
Right.
Somebody has to stand in front of the eye to block the sun to keep it from,
right,
you know, so it will shut.
Yep. That you're right. We've had that problem a couple different times. We've had it a couple times on commercial applications, which is really a pain in the neck. And what we've done, now this is going to sound silly, but it works. What we have done is taken like a toilet paper tube and made like a shield, like a little shield, like an umbrella, and stick it over top of it.
Oh.
And it'll shade it.
Well, why didn't I think of that?
I know it sounds stupid, but it'll work.
Well, it's just crazy because sometimes,
and it's only in the fall. See, as that sun changes, and you get that afternoon sun, and what it does is the sun is so strong, it kind of dilutes the photo eye, because one's a receiver and one's a sender, and it's like a little light beam. But that sun, that afternoon sun, especially in the fall, you're right, it's so strong, it dilutes that beam. And for the safety eye, then there's something blocking it. But if you build like a little shield, the other thing we've taken too is a piece of like roofing rubber, and made like a little helmet over it. But just something that shades that, and it should work for you.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Well, that sounds like a simple fix. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Sorry I didn't ask sooner.
Thanks for calling. Take care.
Wow,
bye-bye.
That was interesting.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have ever thought that.
Oh, we had one poor guy, and I felt so bad because he was an older guy. And he would call, and we would go out, and we couldn't figure it out. And we'd go out, and we couldn't figure it out. We'd go out, we couldn't figure it out. And he was starting to get mad. And that always upsets me if we have a customer that's unhappy.
Yeah.
So finally, you know what it was? There was a leaf on like a spider web.
Yeah.
And the way the wind would blow, sometimes it would flop over in front of the eye, and then it would like flop behind the track. And that's what it was.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to keep those photo eyes clean. Mm-hmm. We've already had cases where there's been a spider web like in the over the photo eye. Mm-hmm. That'll keep it from working. I mean, some of them are really, really sensitive.
Yeah.
But you have to keep them clean. And like, you know, like she was saying,
right,
if you get that after that hot afternoon sun, especially in the fall when the sun's in a different
position in the sky
or whatever, yeah,
right, right.
You have to shield. You almost have to shield it.
You know, so that is so interesting, and that's one of those things where it's a simple, just scope it out, check it out before you call somebody and pay that service.
Oh, you know what? We tell customers this all the time. If you have questions, call on the phone. If we can diagnose it or fix it over the phone, there's no charge for that. I mean, we can always send somebody, but it's $75.
Mm-hmm.
So. You know, another trick with if you're having operator issues, unplug it, let it sit and reset itself. It's like taking your battery out of your cell phone.
Right.
It gives it an opportunity to reset itself. So
interesting.
That works
I would have never have thought that.
Yeah.
But that's...
About
that,
the shield?
Is that pretty common?
What, the sun?
Yeah.
Yeah, and again, it's only if you're facing the west, and it's only in the fall, and But yeah, it is, really. Yep.
749-D105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Again, we're talking with Margie from Buschelman Supply. Jump onto our Facebook page if you have any questions. You can check out some of the photos there. And you can also get to Buschelman Supply's website by going to Buschelman Supply or Buschelman.com. And they're located at 250 Marriott Road. You can call them at 513-771-9121. And just before we got our call about the garage doors, you guys were talking about some of the hardscape features.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, you need to tell my buddy Steve from Land Tech, get up to your place, pick those stone treads
He's
up.
He's ready.
I'm ready, Steve.
Finally.
Yeah. Well, no, I told him anytime. So take those off your hands. You know, it's that time of year. And as a matter of fact, I am so guilty of this. Until I get that done, I'm sitting on, I have containerized plants.
Oh.
Positioned down in my backyard.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like,
we sell, actually, probably our two best sellers are our stone steps, tread material, and our boulders. I think our boulders are outstanding. One, I have to tell you this. One day, it's probably been about a month ago. One day, we got three tractor trailer loads of boulders all in one day. We had 70, might have even been four, but we had at least 75 to 100 tons of boulders delivered in one day. And the guys were going crazy because they have to kind of scoop them up and pile them up.
Right.
Because they go everywhere.
But, so there, are they somewhat like contained and palletized with wire around?
We have way too many to do that.
Oh, wow.
No, they're just stacked up. We have a long row. It's probably 6 or 7 feet high. And it's probably 60, 70 feet long.
So they don't come on the tractor trailer on pallets?
Some of them do. It depends. Some of our weathered boulders from Missouri, they do.
Mm-hmm.
But the granite river boulders, the granite rounded boulders, no, they come on dump trailers.
Oh, wow.
Because it's almost impossible to palletize a round boulder.
It gets difficult, right.
Well, yeah, they won't haul.
And now, I bet your staff was like, maybe she should have ordered two more trucks.
Yeah.
In a facetious way. Yeah, I get that sometimes, too. My dad, I was like, why you got everything coming in here at one time? Well, I didn't schedule it like that. It just happened.
Well,
like
and
that.
Sometimes we have to wait 4 and 6 weeks on a truck.
Right. Get it when you can get it.
Yeah. You place the order, and then you're just kind of sitting waiting for trucks.
How
because
funny.
The dump trailers are scarce. I mean, they're like hen's teeth. And really, most, it's kind of, if you think about it, it makes sense. But a lot of times when the dump trailers come in, they're from farmers, from hauling beans and soybeans and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they do this when the trucks are free to help offset
the
expense they have in the
that
truck.
That makes sense.
But in the fall, then we're competing with them hauling their grain. So we really, sometimes in the fall, we have to wait. So, you know, yeah, you just place the order and just, it
well, whichever, I'm sure whichever pays the most, they'll go in that direction.
Well, and then if they've got beans to get in, they can't, they have to haul them when they're right. dry. No, they, yeah. Nah. So, but yeah, wanna... most of our dump trailers come in on,
wow.
from, no, green, I, green, yeah, and, from farmers.
I mean, we sell some stone, nothing near what you keep on hand. I mean, I will tell people that come into our store, go up to Bushman Supply, and if you can't find it there, I don't think you're going to find it.
Yeah, we really, we try to keep it.
I know that's
really
kind of an old cliche or
but,
saying, but you have a lot of inventory.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. And, you know, my theory is if it might as well sit on the ground, we might get a sale as to sit in the bank. Nobody's getting money out from the banks. I mean, they're not doing anything.
And you don't have to water it.
No, exactly.
No,
exactly.
That's a good thing. I don't have to water it. I don't have to fertilize it.
Yeah, once it's in, we don't. It doesn't cost us anything after that.
No.
7.9 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Margie from Bushman Supply in with us. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation about the garage doors, hardscapes, and landscaping material. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Our friend Margie from Bushman Supply has joined us again today. We've been talking about an awful lot of different things that we wanted to touch base on. You have a big event coming up next month. Tell us a little bit about that, though.
That's the truckload sale. It's a Raynor
garage
dealer. Point. Yeah, it's a Raynor dealer deal that they do once a year. Every dealer is allowed to do a truckload sale, and we get special pricing from Raynor. The actual truckload sale is the 21st through the 24th of September, but we've got until October 13th to place the orders. So if anybody's thinking about a new door, that would probably be the time to do it because there's going to be additional savings that aren't normally available.
And you make sure you take the time to get onto their website, Bushman.com, and click through some of their products and some of the stories about the doors and stuff to make sure you are ready when that sale becomes available.
And I think, too, we have a Facebook page, and I don't know anything about it because I don't do that stuff. But anyway, I think we're going to have – I don't think it's up yet about the truckload sale because I think that'll start that Facebook page part will start in the beginning of September, but there'll be some information on the Facebook page. And while we're talking about the Facebook page too, usually what we've done to kick off our Facebook is every month there's some kind of special deal. I think it's maybe like a gift. I hate to sound so ignorant, but I don't know. But I think it's a special deal, like where you get a gift certificate towards a particular thing. I think we just did one for benches, and I think earlier this year we did one for mulch and this and that and the other thing. So it's a good idea to keep up on it because there's always going to be there's a monthly special on there every month. So next month it'll be devoted to the truckload sale. But
right, that's a nice looking Facebook page.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So get out there and jump on it, like it. You got a lot of interesting things on there. Looks like you got a lot of posts.
Yeah.
So we're going to get you into Facebook.
Well, maybe.
Come on.
I'm lucky I can do email. Are you kidding me?
Ernie and I are like, you're in good hands. We're like, we're better than all.
But you know what? I love people. I love working with people.
Well, people use
that Facebook. That is
well,
not fun.
But wait a minute now. You know what? Not everybody has been around as long as we have. You know, some of the younger generation.
Those are Kurt's customers.
This is the medium. They're all our customers. This is the medium. The young kids that work for us, they don't call me up. They text me.
I know.
Hey, I'm going to be a couple minutes late. It's all texting.
I know. And I can talk so much faster than I can text.
I hear you.
It's very frustrating.
Yeah, I hear you.
Well, we'll help you through this. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to get one more break in here before we leave. We've got Margie from Bushman Supply with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Margie from Bushelman Supply in with us. And don't forget that you can go to their website at bushelmansupply.com. They also have a Facebook page and they have a big event coming up. And we had a question posed on our Facebook page from Jane Bay and wanted to ask Margie about the glow-in-the-dark landscape rocks. And we did a little research on them, Jane, and they appear to be solar. You would purchase them and then you put them out there, and as long as the sun's out, they're only going to glow for just a little while, and they're more of a novelty thing. But certainly if it makes the kids happy for a couple of hours and gets them out of your hair, I would get them.
They look pretty groovy. I'm gonna check those out.
Groovy but
while we're in a break, Margie said there was another way to get kind of light to radiate off of that.
Well, I was gonna say the only, and we've had a couple customers do this, but the only way I'm aware is that you take a boulder and use like a reflective type paint on it. And then if light hits it, like in the evening,
it captures it.
Yeah, it'll bounce it back. Kind of like the paint they use on expressway signs and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But speaking of solar, I will say we've bought two or three sets of solar lights, pathway lights. And we also have some lighthouses at the office that have solar, like a little solar thing.
The beacon?
Yeah. And what happens is over time, because that battery's up by that thing to collect the rays, but over time, it like melts the plastic, and then they don't work because water gets in it. Mm-hmm. So if you do a solar thing, I would say it's probably not, it's going to be a limited lifetime, is my experience.
I agree with you. We sell some of this solar, like little lighting stakes that are really cool.
Yeah, they are.
And we sell a lot of those. And people, believe this or not, this is really interesting. People will take those to the cemetery.
Oh, really?
They leave them right there at the gravesite.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
And it is.
What a concept.
Yeah.
Instead of sometimes taking flowers, which I want you to take flowers too, those solar lighted stakes are really interesting, and people like that. And they change colors. There's a lot of different varieties to choose from.
So.
Yeah. But Margie, thank you so much for coming by again.
Thanks, guys. It's always fun.
It's been a blast. And we're going to remind our listeners, too, you have the gigantic truckload sale coming up.
Right. Next month, about a month away. Yep.
And check out their Facebook page. There is a page dedicated to the truckload sale on Bushelman's Facebook page. And then you can also check ours, because as soon as it gets posted or updated, we're going to pass that along as well. Margie, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks, guys.
Always a pleasure. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We'll talk to you next week.